And the sound of a tractor firing up signals, yes, we're in Iowa. There are fewer farms here than in the past, but still gorgeous farmland. And if you clamber out onto windswept, snow-covered fields, you can meet a cow. Cows are fed by Iowa's plentiful corn, so are we, but nearly 50% goes to produce ethanol. And while you didn't hear a lot about that this year on the campaign trail, it's primary to local politicians. Here's Iowa's Republican Governor Terry Branstad, whose son runs an ethanol trade group, at the Renewable Fuels Summit this month, explaining why he did not invite Ted Cruz.
He is heavily financed by big oil. So we think that once Iowans realize that fact, they might find other things about him attractive, but I think it would be very damaging to our state. And that's the reason why he hasn't been invited to this, because he hasn't supported renewable fuels.
Cruz is the only candidate daring to do that in Iowa, where the Lincoln Way Energy ethanol plant is one of many that grinds 50 to 60,000 bushels of corn a day. Yesterday, huge trucks lined up to pour out corn. So what's true about the benefits of ethanol? We sat down with Iowa State Associate Scientist Dave Swenson and asked first, what is it?
Ethanol is ethyl alcohol. It's distilled from corn primarily, or other kinds of grains, but primarily from corn. And we produce a lot of it here in Iowa.
And then it is added to gas?
Right. The pure ethanol, once it's produced, is blended with gasoline. Nationally, we're at about a 10% blend. Some people will burn a higher blend. It's called E85. But most of us consume E10, 10% ethanol in our gasoline.
Now, I remember when all the excitement rose about ethanol, this idea that we could become energy independent if we switched to ethanol. A lot of excitement. What was the promise?
Well, the promise was that we would have a certain amount of energy independence. Corn ethanol was the fastest pathway. That pathway is yet to open up. So we could get to energy independence relatively rapidly with corn ethanol. So that was the promise. Now, that promise was made also during a time when we had a lot of energy insecurity, and we thought that we were held hostage by other countries, other forces. So the fervor for ethanol was a combination. It was a coalition of liberal and conservative interests. It was a coalition of environmental as well as agricultural interests. And you put them all together, and they had enough horsepower to create the renewable fuel standard, which mandates a certain level of biofuels into the fuel supply.
The RFS, and this is the law that requires that there be a certain amount of corn ethanol. And this becomes the political football here at the caucuses. But before we get there, so that was all the promise and the excitement, and the government passed a law requiring the use of the ethanol. But then what were some of the concerns that started to rise about the use of corn for ethanol?
Oh, using corn for ethanol has two impacts right away. First of all, you divert corn from other uses, so that would be feeding animals or historic our export market. And when you created that massive demand for corn domestically, you also bid up the price. Now, that's good for corn farmers, but it's bad for everybody else who uses corn. So it has an indirect impact on the food cost to a degree in the United States. But the other impact that people are talking about is because the rise in prices for grain, especially corn, created an opportunity for people to put more land into corn production. Some of that land were idled acres. Some of that land was land that had been grasslands or pasture. And so what we ended up with is some environmental trade-offs that ended up being, by many people's accounts, negative and making ethanol suspect with regard to its clean definition.
Well, tell us more about that, because some people are now saying it's more polluting than oil when you put together, first of all, the amount of land that it uses, but also the way it has to be shipped and the methane that's produced just by getting it from place to place.
Corn ethanol is complicated, and it's complicated because it takes a lot of energy to produce ethanol, first off, and then in the process of producing ethanol, and because you're using a lot of energy, as well as your new land practices, you do produce many more greenhouse gases. The big question is, does it net out as being environmentally beneficial or environmentally harmful? That's still being wrestled with. The jury, if there is a jury, tends to be less optimistic optimistic, if not leaning towards pessimistic, with regard to the clean claims associated with ethanol. Agriculture, though, Iowa, with regard to agriculture in Iowa, we're having a heck of a conversation. And that conversation has to do with nutrient runoff. Nutrient is a nice word for broken down animal waste and or chemicals that are put on the land.
And runoff into the water.
And it runs off into the surface water or into the shallow ground water, which is the water that you and I use to drink here in Iowa. And it has to be treated in some instances because the nitrate levels get so high. So currently we have an action going on at the city of Des Moines. Their waterworks treatment plant has to treat the water that comes in via the Raccoon River. Occasionally it has to treat that water because actually it has to blend that water to make it so that the nitrate levels are lower than the standards. They have sued upstream drainage districts. Drainage districts are quasi-governmental organizations by farmers to move the water from their land into small canals. Those canals eventually link into the rivers. And what they're doing is they're calling that a point source pollutant that needs to be regulated. Agriculture historically has not had its pollution or consequences, externalities, regulated by the federal government. This lawsuit is challenging that and saying these drainage districts directly deposit polluted water into the commons, and it needs to be regulated.
Well, there's that. And as you said, it's maybe because of overuse of land. I mean, there's so much land being used to grow corn at this point, but
it's a combination. Yeah. It's not just corn. It's corn. It's soybeans. One of the leaders is the Soybean Association. Soybeans fix nitrogen into the soil. They grab it from the air, and they put it into the soil. There are all kinds of ways that nitrogen finds its way into our soil. It's land-applied manures. It's applied chemical fertilizers, it's as well as naturally occurring. And you put it all together with runoff. Runoff will be soil and or chemical runoffs or organic runoffs, and it finds its way into the soil. The big issue is minimizing the runoff, maintaining the levels of nutrients required by crops, yet limiting the amount of nutrients that find their way into the waterways.
So there's that issue. But the Friends of the Earth, the Natural Resources Defense Council, Clean Air Task Force, this is just a short list of people who now oppose ethanol because, you know, they say that once you add the emissions, we talked about them, from growing, shipping, processing corn, ethanol creates more pollution than oil.
And that is a big issue now. Does ethanol produce the net gains, both green and energy gains, that we thought it did a decade ago? The argument is slowly weakening. What we do know is cellulosic ethanol or other kinds of advanced fuels have much greater environmental benefits. The problem is even though we have two great big ethanol plants that are cellulosic in the state of Iowa.
And cellulosic is?
Oh, cellulosic is ethanol that's made just directly from plant matter, like grasses or corn stover, the stalks and the cobs of it. And you're not grinding up the corn, you're grinding up just the plant. The cellulosic plants that have been put up with great big fanfare, though, are yet to produce very much ethanol. Just 2 million gallons were produced last year, and the United States supposedly has about 100 million gallons worth of capacity, but they're having trouble getting this product out the pipe.
Well, Dave Swenson, we're going to wrap up here because, wow, you are the guy to talk to. I understand Tom Brokaw is right behind me waiting in line. But I know you've also spoken about how much the caucuses actually bring to Iowa. Isn't enough for all of the huzzah, you know, everything that happened? What happens here economically when the caucuses come?
Well, the economic impact is incredibly disappointing. What we get is a lot of attention, but not much money. In the last big election, in the 2007 cycle, just in the last two quarters, just 4.4% of all campaign spending found its way directly to some sort of Iowa recipient. Most of the money gets spent in Virginia and D.C. and Maryland and New York.
On the big PACs and the political groups.
Right, and in the fundraising. You know, you're going to go raise money where the money is. So what we get is the show. We don't get the production. We get the show. It's like off-Broadway. People are trying everything out. It's that whole great big production that goes on, and then Iowa, it just happens to be where the campaigns get filmed.